Podcast. Sipping on Purple. We are now on episode 5 of the Sipping on Purple podcast, and I still don't know how to start it. We got Loretta over on the other end. I'm Roger, and this is the podcast about nothing. Northwestern is bye week this week, but we decided we still want to do a podcast because Loretta apparently has material after Northwestern's loss to Army that both of us decided on air would not happen, which shows how effective we are at predicting things. Correct assessment?
I think I did say that
You said that you could see it becoming a loss. And sure enough, it did.
Right. I did predict a Northwestern victory, so I'm not going to come on here and say that. One of those stupid hedge predictions that people make, you know, where they say, oh, well, Northwestern really could lose this game, but I don't think they will, and then they can say they were right either way.
To be fair, you did say that. That was a pretty accurate description of what you did say. So I'll give you that. Although it's not really a fun thing to brag about, because none of us really enjoyed that loss. So what are your initial thoughts, I guess, over there?
My initial thoughts are really not good. And especially on the defensive side of the ball. Now, there's a lot of talk, well, Army runs a triple option, and teams aren't used to seeing triple options, so maybe this isn't a problem. But to me, the problems were not – it wasn't because Army was running these weird trick plays. That wasn't the issue, because Army really seemed to have about 5 plays in their playbook. There wasn't a lot of variety there, and Northwestern had a lot of opportunities to make tackles and hold the Army players to short gains, and time after time – Trent Steelman, who looked like the second coming of Eric Crouch, Tommy Frazier, was managing to elude tacklers. And worse than that, he was managing to drag tacklers with him across the line of scrimmage. And that, not across the line, across the first down line. In particular, on that 4th-and-1 play in the fourth quarter, when Bryce McNall, who had the worst 15-tackle performance in the history of college football, because all of his tackles were after 10 yards downfield, he had Mr. Steelman wrapped up, and Steelman just essentially shoved him over the first down line and just basically out-muscled a Big Ten linebacker, an Army quarterback who was a glorified running back.
Yeah,
it was not good.
There was an issue which is not a novel thing in the Northwestern defensive, defense of the past few years, which was guys were getting yards after the tackle, like in like droves, and that's something I'm not going to criticize. I mean, I'm not going to say is something that you can possibly interpret well. And it is weird because it's a lot of things that we saw against BC, and we thought, well, BC has a good running back. They're known for their offensive line, and Northwestern kind of dominated both of those areas. The running back, other than the one big play, was pretty tamed. And they were tackling well, and everything was going all right until, you see what happened yesterday, and or not yesterday, because it's now Monday, but Saturday, and it was pretty unencouraging. I will say, that's definitely a viewpoint. I'll give them a little bit of slack with the triple option thing that, there were definitely some tackling issues that don't seem it seems more, I guess, disappointing for the rest of the year than some might have made it out. I'll give you that. Yeah, definitely.
The thing that really concerns me is that it wasn't like, I don't know, sometimes with the option, until guys are just in the wrong place, but it seemed like Army guys were just outrunning and out-athleting Northwestern players in a lot of instances. So their most successful plays were on either one, when they would just do that play where Steelman would sort of loop around and have all 3 of the wishbone guys would be lead blockers. Steelman would elude them and get some yards. Or on the triple option play on the pitch to the running back, and Northwestern was just too slow to get over there and cut the guy off on the sideline before he could get some momentum going. And it just seems to me that Northwestern being the Big Ten program and Army being the service academy, Northwestern should have the better athletes and guys with better speed.
Yeah.
And some people pointed to the fact that, yes, two of their defensive tackles were both out, but that wasn't really the problem to me because the fullback runs up the middle weren't effective at all, really, for Army. And, I mean, you would like to see the defensive tackles in the backfield making plays, which wasn't happening. But even still, it really seemed like there were a lot of times where they should have been able to prevent Army from getting positive yardage, and they couldn't. So, that really doesn't bode well for the future when you're facing Nathan Shielhouse, Denard Robinson, and Taylor Martinez, and even Marquise Gray, who are all much better athletes than Steelman.
And they're all Northwestern is going to play a lot of running quarterbacks on the schedule, and that's scary right now. Because, that was that guy who we just saw. So I guess the question is now, having sort of, seen what happened, obviously Northwestern, is now 2-1. And I guess, how do you kind of reassess your thoughts for the rest of the season? Because after 1-0, we're thinking, man, this team's good. After 2-0, we were like, that game wasn't that impressive, but the rest of the Big Ten looks pretty awful. And now I'm just kind of, confused and indifferent. We're back to realizing that how important Dan Persa is. All those of us who, touting Cade Coulter are kind of, he didn't look too impressive. And they got 380 yards rushing, but it's not like they were, putting up loads of points. Northwestern offensively only scored 14 points, which isn't what you hope for, going against a game like that. So does this seem like a bowl team to you?
I think they can find a way to get to 6 wins. I think they're not. I don't foresee them losing to Rice at home. I'm all but willing to chalk that one up in the win column, which could be dangerous since Rice did beat Purdue. But I mean, it's Rice. Let's be honest. I mean,
and we saw last year. We saw a very similar team. Northwestern's not that much different than they were last year, and Northwestern won that game pretty handily.
Right. I don't see them losing to Rice, but after that, I don't think you can put any other games in the win column. I don't think Minnesota or Indiana are any worse than Army. I think they're probably at least as good.
But I mean, my thought to sort of be the perennial optimist. Obviously, Northwestern lost to Army, and that's a lot worse than we expected, because pretty much everyone was saying, this is a very winnable game. They should win. It would be disappointing if they didn't. It'd be surprising. No one's not saying that. But the way I look at it is, coming into the year, I said, when you look at the big at Northwestern's division, it's Nebraska, which is clearly the best team, and Minnesota, which is clearly the worst team, and four other teams in the middle, and nothing has really changed my perspective on that. Michigan and Michigan State, to go all transitive property on this whole thing, both had their Notre Dame experiences, and Notre Dame just doesn't seem like a very good football team, but still managed to, put up a lot of points on Michigan and push them to the brink and beat Michigan State. And Iowa, lost to Iowa State, who's just a pretty bad football team. I guess they're 3-0 now, having beaten UConn and squeaked out a win over Northern Iowa. But no one seems that strong. It still seems like a bad conference. And I'm thinking, obviously there's no way not to be disappointed. But after regrouping a little bit, I see a team that, maybe with Dan Persa at, full strength, which, having watched him in practice last week, he didn't look that bad. I don't know why there was no urgency to put him in, because, I'm not going to speculate on his medical condition, but, if he's up to par, I still think this is an all right football team. I'm still going to say 6 wins is what I expect them to get to another bowl game, despite this, I guess, is my thought.
No, yeah, I think
I just talked for like a minute and a half straight. I apologize.
No, it's fine. I mean, the rest of the Big Ten, I think, is, you're right, that there's definitely some weak spots out there. And Nebraska doesn't look as dominant as people thought they would. They haven't really. Washington, I don't think, is that great this year. Their defense, in particular, was supposed to be the strength of their team. Their defense has been bad 2 weeks in a row. So,
I think what this game, in terms of these podcasts, we always seem to get into like the long view discussion. When you're looking at Northwestern, for a while there, we kind of started thinking that what happened without Dan Persa was somehow relevant to how good of a football team Northwestern is with Dan Persa. And I'm just realizing again after the Army game that it's not really. Like, it's such a game changer. Take me back for having said otherwise.
Yeah, it's definitely completely changes the complexion of the team. And who in the world is going to start a quarterback against Illinois? I mean, have you ever seen a situation like this where there are legitimately three different guys who could start?
Yeah, it's very Philadelphia Eagles-esque. Because the starter's hurt, the backup is got benched. There's really no other way to put it. Got benched. You know, he wasn't performing up to par. So, you know, Trevor Siemian comes in, first game of his career in serious action. He looks very good.
I think Siemian is getting a little more credit than I think his stat line looks a lot better than what he really did. I don't think he made any particularly difficult throws.
Yeah.
Mostly he benefited greatly from just getting the ball to Jeremy Ebert and letting him make plays, which should have been probably should have been a more significant portion of the game plan. Every time they did that screen to Ebert, like all of Army's linebackers and defensive linemen just would completely bite on it and go for the quarterback, and Ebert had so much room to run. But I also think that Coulter brings so much more to the table with his running, and that especially against Illinois, because Illinois, I didn't actually see their game against Arizona State, but I read that they held that Arizona State offense to only 14 points, and I saw Arizona State the week before against Missouri, and they were lighting up the scoreboard. So I think Illinois' defense is very strong, particularly their front four, and I think they could use a guy who can scramble and get out of pressure.
And Arizona State, obviously good against tall quarterbacks, such as the 6'8 guy from Arizona State. So we will,
with a misspelled tattoo.
We will avoid the Evan Watkins at starter. Yeah, who knows? Definitely to like praise Trevor Siemian is like because he went 7 for 9,
5 for 7.
5 for 7 is like exactly the same thing that I did 2 weeks ago with Cade Coulter. So not gonna do it. And you know, another thing is like let's not you know. First of all, to say that these guys are worse than Dan Persa isn't saying that they're bad or that they won't be good at some point. You know, these are the guys who will be starting next year.
I think both guys have a lot of upside, definitely, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
In certain roles. But also, I don't know, I think that the coordinators for Northwestern are getting far too much blame. Far more blame than they deserve, from what I've been reading. Mick McCall seems to be the whipping boy for, I don't know really what, conservative play calling, I guess. I've seen some people criticizing him that they should have been throwing the ball down the field more with Coulter, but from what I saw when Coulter tried to do that, he was Evan Watkins-style airmailing a few throws that guy open.
Even the touchdown to Ebert, you know, wasn't perfectly thrown.
No. Although Randy Cross really lost his mind, saying that was the greatest catch of the season and pro or college.
It was a really impressive catch. Yeah.
It was a very good catch, but I mean, I don't know about that. Oh. It's a little bit of hyperbole there from Mr. Cross. It was a good catch, but I think that it's just, I really think the coordinators, just there seems to be a tendency here when people, from who gets the blame for losses. It used to be that last year, number one target, it was Demos. If Demos missed a field goal, it was Demos' fault. And then number two was Mike McCall for running the ball too much. And he was the big scapegoat. And it was very rare. You know, I just think that there seems to be a big tendency to rip the coordinators for the struggles of the offense and defense.
Yeah, I kind of want to say just, you know, First of all, like, we've said a lot of, like, things about, like, oh, you know, we lost to Army. How awful. This is terrible. It's, like, something unspeakably bad. I just want to say, like, Army beat Northwestern, like, you know, there's the cliche of, like, you know, we beat ourselves, like, whatever. Like, right. Army was, like, the better team by a lot.
No question. And they deserve all, once.
They deserve all the credit for that, yes. You know, victory. And, you know, you hope their season goes well. But, yeah, definitely a little bit of there's always going to be, like, you know, misplaced blame in any sport about any sporting event. But it really came down to summarize, it really came down to, like, not tackling people. And when that happens three straight times, the third one will result in a first down if the second one didn't already. And if the third one didn't, then the fourth one will. And they're going to hold the ball for 40 minutes.
Right.
And there's nothing to make the call.
Definitely knows what to do on. I think he's knows what's up on fourth down. He was very aggressive on his fourth down decisions.
Well, their kicker kind of forced into, their kicker wasn't too good. Yeah.
Late, but they said on TV that kicker had made 11 field goals in a row going into the game. So he wasn't. He has, I guess, a decent track record. And yeah, and that one he missed. That first one he missed was a pretty.
Yeah, missed by like a foot.
Right, and it was a 50-yarder with the distance. And that second one was just straight-up shitty. And that was another thing. Army really gave Northwestern chances between that missed 25-yard field goal and that fumble on a handoff that set Northwestern up to 30, which probably led to a punt. Which, really, when you get the ball in the opponent's 30-yard line and you end up punting and they get the ball back at the 20, it's really not the
things went wrong.
Situation.
Yeah, but – and also, they – you know, it seemed like they went for it on a fourth down a lot. I think they ended – it was three times, though. But it just seemed like when you're getting that type of yardage with a run and you know that they're not going to be able to tackle you, you know, at the point of initial contact, you know, like what's the worst thing that can happen on fourth and three? You know, right. It's like it didn't come up often because they would generally get it on third down. After, you know, getting a gain of four on first down and getting a gain of five on second down. It's definitely something we've seen before. The game that comes to mind for no apparent reason is Minnesota 2 years ago, where, like, it was just like, oh, first down, and then it's second and four because they ran for 6 yards.
That was an extremely frustrating game.
After they got tackled, like, you thought they would get tackled at the third like for a gain of three, and then, you know, they ended up falling down 3 yards later. So, you know, and you know, hopefully that's fixable, but whatever.
Right. See, that's the thing to me. You know, you brought this up and giving credit to Army, and that's the thing. Army really was the better. Like, I mean, if Northwestern played Army 10 times, how many times do you think Northwestern's winning that game? Like, I can't say, based on what I saw there, I mean, I guess Northwestern historically has been a far better program over the last decade and has more talented players. But on the other hand, like, I really don't see Northwestern winning more than, say, 5 or 6 based on what I saw out of 10. And maybe I could be wrong about that, and maybe Northwestern just had an off day, but it really looked to me that Army was staying right with them. But that is what's the most concerning thing to me. You know, I see people say Northwestern, they're flat, they didn't have heart, or whatever. And I'm not really a big fan of those kind of critiques. I think the players always play hard. Somebody is going to have to lose every game. You know, both teams play hard. Someone loses.
It wasn't a question of motivation either. It wasn't a question of motivation or lack of preparation. Because Northwestern was very serious about preparing for both defenses. Or both the defense and the offense, both of which were schemey. In addition to that, like, there was just, like, a general sense of excitement about the game. And, you know, they held the ball for 40
minutes. Against, you know, a program like Army, even if they may not be great at football, there's a certain prestige there. I mean, it's a 12-game season. I could see maybe, you know, certainly not.
No one's...
Any, 162 game baseball season. God, you're gonna be nailing it in sometimes.
This isn't really like a valid point of. If anyone ever says that, and people do sometimes, I'm just like, that's one of the things that gets me to roll my eyes and read into the next thing. College kids are always calling the team. That's never a question with the team, you know. They're,
right, so. And that's something that I see sometimes. And this is another one. I'm not sure if I want to open this can of worms, but I've seen a couple of recaps about how players at the sidelines that weren't responding to Pat Fitzgerald. You know, he was trying to fire them up, and why aren't the players listening to Pat Fitzgerald? Why aren't they playing harder? It's like, man, they played hard. They just got outplayed.
Yeah, not to get into typical, you know, talk sports radio, but that's like another argument that I'm just like, if you're like that mad about the, first of all, not an issue, and second of all, if you're like upset about the motivation of like college students, like, you know, find something more important in the world to be upset about. Right. Moving on. So I guess you're more on the negative side of things. Everyone's pretty, the Northwestern atmosphere is not a positive one this week. Besides all the Kafka-ing, which was like...
That was fantastic. That was a Twitter explosion unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was unreal. And I'm really excited for hopefully he plays. Northwestern doesn't play next week, but right now Mike Vick, and this might change by the time I post this, but is like probably not going to start next week.
Right, they're taking the concussion seriously now.
As they should. Northwestern won't play next week, but there will be an open threat if Mike Kafka is starting for Philadelphia against the Giants. You know what else is just the Boston College thing is really depressing. Like, College, like.
You've seen the BC and Russian threads. They want to fire the athletic. They don't just want to fire the coach, the athletic director. They're done with him, too.
Yeah, it went from like. That win went from, like, everything being exciting to right now where all the things that we did well against BC, we didn't do well this week. And also, like, Boston College is bad. Like, back to the transitive property scale of things, yikes. Like, they lost to us. They lost to Duke, who lost to Richmond. So...
It's bad. And the thing is,
it's wicked.
The thing is, they haven't even hit rock bottom quite yet. I mean, you think losing at home to Duke is rock bottom, but it's not. Because next week they play UMass. And I'm going to say this.
Oh, this is exciting.
UMass program. They almost beat Michigan last. They almost beat Michigan last year, if you remember.
This is like.
They took Michigan down to the wire. If they lose to UMass at home, like, I think there's going to be a pink slip waiting in the locker room for Mr. Spaziani.
Oh, definitely. Like, the thing is, I really enjoyed that fan base. The BC Interruption's a really good site. Like, they as far as sites go, I was, like, a fan of them. I'm kind of in Schadenfreude mode right now if that happened. Like, because that is rock bottom. Like, and you're always looking for college football rock bottom in other programs just because it's, like really funny. They're so almost there. It's pretty bad right now, but they've got that. That does sound like the next level, the ninth circle, and we eagerly watch.
Right. See, I'm along, as you probably gathered from the post I was writing on the site during Boston College Week. I'm a longtime hater of Boston College football, but it was kind of disappointing at first because after Northwestern beat them, I'm like, okay, well, now I hope Boston College has a good season and it'll look good for Northwestern. But now that it's clear that BC sucks, and that's under no circumstances going to look like a good win, I'm just back in full on Boston College hate mode.
But if I had to, you know, the one bright spot is that every team in the Big Ten, like I wrote on Twitter the other day, like, if, like, the Super Conference thing happens and you want to join, like, the Big Ten, like, you should lose like a really unimpressive team, like in a non-conference game, like right now, because that's what we're looking for. Like every team has looked like has made me like giggle at some point because of like looking really painfully bad against a non-conference team that...
Right. I mean, Wisconsin is the lone holdout that is...
Yeah. And, you know, obviously Nebraska's 3-0, but... That's a bright spot. There is all sorts of comedy around the Big Ten. And,
so is that, are we down to two undefeated teams in the Big Ten now? Or am I... three besides Wisconsin and Nebraska that I'm missing? Oh, Illinois.
Illinois, yes. Oh, thank God. You know, at least we don't have to play them for a while. Too. Yeah.
So we're down to four after...
That was quick.
Yeah, 3 weeks into the season, we're down to four.
You know, man, Big Ten pride.
Ohio State going down. Joe Bowserman, who was the 2-for-14 passer.
I believe Rotel lost last week to Kraft. It's just, like, all around bad.
It's brutal. At least Purdue and Indiana beat their FCS teams.
Anyway, you know what I keep forgetting to do? Like, I keep getting, like, 25 minutes into the podcast before, like, mentioning that we have a guest. You know, I need to, like, set, like, a to-do list. We're going to take a break with absolutely no segue possible, or no relevant segue. We have Jonathan Hodges from HailToPurple.com. Is going to be joining us. He also talks about football, I think. I haven't heard that part of the podcast yet because we haven't recorded it, but I think he's going to talk to us about football.
Most likely.
All right. So, music time.
And the mic I rap is not like a savage, but in my own way of doing damage as I design a genuine line. Now, who flat top rules in 89?
Warm it up, gang. Warm it up, gang. Warm it up, gang. Warm it up.
And we are joined this time by Jonathan Hodges of Hail to Purple, which is an internet site which you might have heard of. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good. I guess good enough. How are you guys?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we just spent like 20 to 30 minutes before this, you know, complaining about Northwestern sports. So there's that.
Yes.
It was a serious pity party. Me leading the way.
And presumably... That's really not too good for anybody right about now.
Well, maybe I can try and talk some people off the cliff. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm already kind of off the cliff. Because, you know, the way I see it, everyone else in the Big Ten is also pretty bad at football. Which kind of goes along with the whole losing to Army thing. How do you feel on that front, I guess?
Well, I mean, obviously a lot of teams have had their troubles, especially in our division. Somewhat fortunately, and we don't have to play Wisconsin, which is a good thing. So, you know, Northwestern always has a shot at coming back from these early season losses and upsetting people at various stages of the season. So I think any Northwestern fan has that to hope for. And there's always the return of Dan Persa. So we have all that going for us.
Yeah, that was pretty easy, that whole talking us off a cliff thing.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, that didn't take very long. Who do you expect to see starting a quarterback in 2 weeks? I guess you're not really doing too much more than guessing at this point, given that who knows how Persa's going to be. But what do you think the quarterback option should be going forward? Dan Persa, 1A and 1B if he's healthy?
I really think that they're going to go with Persa. I mean, if he got cleared by the medical staff to play in this game, then I'm fairly certain he should be ready to go in 2 weeks. But like you said, we don't know for sure. But what I would expect to see is him to come out as a starter, him to play, you know, maybe 80% of the snaps, and then I'd imagine they'd bring in Coulter as a change of pace guy since Persa might not have his legs fully under him at that point. So that's what I would expect. But, I mean, Semien didn't do too bad being thrown into, you know, a pretty tough situation there at the end of the game. So even if he came out, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah. But talking a little bit more about, I guess we spent a pretty long time talking about, I guess, how much of a big deal losing to Army, which I mean, at least I didn't expect, you know, a lot of people didn't expect, maybe thought of it as an option, but, you know, not a likely scenario. I guess how do you perceive, like how big of a loss this is in the main view, I guess, considering, you know, there was no Dan Persa and, you know, Freaky System and all that good stuff?
Well, I mean, going into the game, I was definitely part of the Northwestern groupthink, I think, and we really thought that we had this one in the bag. I was probably, you know, way more confident than I was going into the season, just because of Northwestern's first two games, and with BC losing to Duke and EIU being a moderately bad FCS team, that's probably not a fair assessment of Northwestern. So maybe we were, you know, sipping on the purple Kool-Aid a little bit too much at that point.
You know, I see what you did there. Intriguing.
Yeah, I thought I'd throw that in there. In any case, I think, you know, we were all a little bit too confident, and, you know, that goes into something I put into my post-game analysis that'll be at Hail to Purple soon, you know, shameless plug in there, which is Northwestern just doesn't do well as the favorite. And you can read that article for the stats, but, you know, as a favorite, let me pull up the numbers here.
Loretta did something on this also a while back.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, since Fitz has taken over, NU has gone 17-7 when they're the favorite, but they've covered on just 20.8% of those games. So that's not that good. Meanwhile, when they're the underdog, they've covered 61% of the time. So
I think that ties into, like, there is kind of a perception issue. Well, actually, that seems like it would – I'm just very confused by all of this.
Yes, and I think that's Fitz's ultimate goal, is to confuse us all.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Yes, and therefore he can strike at the most, you know, unsuspecting time.
Yeah.
I think when you look at this game going forward, it looks bad for Northwestern and it makes us less optimistic going forward into Big Ten play, which it certainly should. But on the one hand, it's a non-conference game, and the only way this really matters is if they lose fewer than three Big Ten games. I mean, if they win fewer than three Big Ten games and they're not bowl eligible as a result, because I don't think there's really a big difference between 6 and 7 wins. So the fact that it's a non-conference game, I think, really takes a lot of the sting out of it. And as long as they can get bowl eligible, it's really not that bad a thing. I mean, obviously, the great 95 Northwestern team lost to Miami of Ohio. Now, I'm not saying that this team's going 8-0 in conference play. I think that would be ridiculously optimistic.
Surprising.
But that said, yes, you can bounce back from non-conference losses, and it has happened before. So it's not the end of the world going forward to lose a non-conference game, but it should raise some red flags, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I guess we were kind of discussing earlier the bowl eligibility thing. It would seem for me like a major kind of step back for Northwestern at this point in time, for that to be a thing, you know? Like, but do you see this team winning, you know, 4 more games over the course of the – obviously, you're the off-the-cliff guy. But do you see that as like a question at this point, that, you know, this might be the first team in, you know, a few years to end up sitting out in late December, early January?
I really don't think so. I think that they'll find a way to, you know, scrounge together at least 4 wins, because, you know, at this point, Minnesota and Indiana are looking pretty bad. I was
Arby-esque, somebody
said. Yeah, I was not looking too great. I mean, they had a big comeback, but their defense is not what it was last year or before. And, you know, Northwestern has a way of picking up another win in there, and there are definitely winnable games. I mean, Rice is still on the schedule. They beat Purdue, but they have to come to Evanston in November, so they'll probably be a little chilly. I really think they'll find a way to put together at least 4 wins, but I believe that would be a disappointment, because I think most of us had probably 7, most likely 8 wins penciled in going into the year, given the senior-laden team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and I'm sure they would be extremely disappointed with, you know, a 6-6 appearance in Detroit.
I believe I did predict 6-6, but then they played well the first game, and I upped that to 8 wins, and then I guess now back on down to 6. You know, I'm flip-flopping all over the place here. But my initial pessimism was almost entirely based on the questions about Dan Persons' health.
It seemed like those questions are valid at this point, you know, because the question of whether they could win without him and all that stuff, because, you know, just lost to, you know, Arby.
Right. Another thing that's come up is there's been some criticism of Mick McCall's play calling, which seems to be a very common theme whenever Northwestern loses a game to a team that they probably shouldn't lose to. What's your take, Jonathan, on Mick McCall as an offensive coordinator? Do you think the criticism is deserved, or is he getting too much of the blame?
Well, at first I was, you know, questioning. I guess his first couple of years, I was definitely questioning him because Northwestern was a pass happy offense that, you know, when teams managed to either get a lot of sacks, which has happened more than we'd like, or, you know, somehow fluster the quarterback like they did somehow Dan Persons at the end of the Michigan State game last year, you know, our offense is just basically stopped. And then that's why we've all been hoping for the running game to add that prong to the attack, which we really haven't seen with McCall at the helm. And honestly, we haven't seen since Dunbar left after the 2005 season. So that's been the biggest drawback. But honestly, I think he's, you know, trying to deal with the hand he's been given. And we haven't had really, you know, a really strong running back in the stable since Sutton left. And the offensive line has definitely had questions in recent years. They look better this year, but then again, last game, you know, they showed some weakness there. So I think he's trying to do what he's been given, and he is a quarterback's guy. So I'm not surprised at all that he's, you know, running a quarterback-heavy system. And it also helps that he's had some talent at that position, you know, between Bechet, who ended his career pretty well, Kafka, who obviously just actually played in the NFL.
So confusing. But it was the best experience, like the best NFL watching experience, not related to the Jets, I've had in so long. That was so fun to watch.
Northwestern hasn't had an alum start a game at quarterback since Otto Graham, right? Is that right? I know they've had a lot of guys get in games, but I'm pretty sure Otto Graham was the last guy to start.
That's a very good question. I honestly don't know, and I'd have to ask my fellow friends at Hail to Purple who know a lot more of the history than I do. But
shameless plug 2.0.
Yeah, that very well may be the case. Again, like you said, others have taken snaps. Most recently, Baz back with Carolina a few years ago in garbage time. But that may be the case.
I guess the big question for me, I randomly cut you off earlier to yell about Mike Kafka, the greatest quarterback in Philadelphia Eagle history.
It's definitely worth it.
Yeah. But I guess the question for me at this point in time is, like, every year, you know, we talk about this, you know, Northwestern fans are used to, like, losing these games that they shouldn't, you know, these ugly non-conference games to, you know, non-quality, nothing against Army, who, like I said earlier, like, legitimately won this game, like, solidly beat Northwestern. But I almost wonder, like, how much of this loss is like, is the perception that Northwestern like can't take these games lightly? I guess obviously that's true, but how much of this is like the situation Northwestern is in this season, and how much of this is that freaky tendency to lose these ugly games to bad teams, you know, and play down when we're the favorites and always play to the level of our opponents? Because to me, it strikes me as like, as so related to the Stan Persa thing and him not being able to play, more so than it relates to, you know, Northwestern's perennial suckiness against worse teams. I mean, that was kind of rambly, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get your point. And even with Persa out, the way that they played the first two games, they should have been able to beat Army because I think that BC would play Army close, if not beat them.
Because they don't look like able to beat, you know, anybody.
I think Keekly would single-handedly destroy the Army triple option. I think he would, by himself, just I mean, I think he would probably end up with 30 tackles in a game against
Yes, he would. He would tackle all three options simultaneously.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean,
he's won Defensive Player of the Week in the ACC. I think he's won 2 out of 3 weeks, despite the fact that they've lost because he's just been all over the field doing things by himself.
Yeah,
which is pretty strong to be winning Player of the Week twice on a team that's 0-3 with some ugly losses.
Although he did get juked by Kane Coulter, which makes makes you kind of wonder, or makes me sad because I just watch Kane Coulter not do that against a lot of Army defenders.
Yeah, right. He did it once, but once was not enough.
Yeah, he had that one nice run that he broke out on. But
I think Kane Coulter should definitely be playing over Simeon going forward, largely because I think that Coulter adds so much with his running ability. And Simeon, I think, with a year of development, would become a much better passer than Coulter. But none of the passes he completed against Army were really all that challenging of throws. I don't think he completed anything that Coulter couldn't have completed. So I think Coulter just adds an element that Simeon doesn't.
I'm just not going to comment after 7 passes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously did, I'm talking about Simeon, of course, he did a solid job, you know, in a really tough situation, probably one of the toughest you can be put in. And it really helped that, you know, he just got the ball to Ebert, and Ebert was obviously on a mission that day after that back of the end zone pass catch earlier from Coulter, and then that crazy 62-yard run. He was obviously, you know, bent on doing it himself. So, again, I wouldn't put too much credit directly on Simeon for that. Anyway, I think he's competent enough. But the real key in the Army game and with Coulter was that Army's defense really allowed them to put a bunch of guys at the line of scrimmage. We're talking they had like 8 guys close to the line almost every snap, and their main job was just to prevent NU from running the ball. And they did that, and then Coulter, he seemed to just get mentally flustered and wasn't able to complete anything, and then, you know, was picking the wrong guy to throw to or just taking off. So I think maybe he can take that as a lesson, use the bye week to, you know, kind of prepare himself mentally, and then hopefully have better results going forward.
So if I'm not, to kind of change it up, if I'm not mistaken, you did attend the game, correct?
Yes, I did.
First off, what was that like? Tell about the experience of, you know, the whole, obviously Northwestern brought a lot of fans. What was that like? And also, I was wondering if you wanted to go in on a split down the middle, Sip It on Purple / Hail to Purple, perhaps like airlift of some sort, because like the C thing is already taken, by LTP. But if there's any other sort of alternate means of transportation, like some sort of group hovercraft ride to an upcoming game, I need to show off, I feel.
Yes. Unfortunately, I did not go on the sailgate. I did know some people who did get to go on that, but it was a very good experience, I'd say. I guess the only downside is that it's virtually impossible to, you know, or it takes a large amount of time to get into West Point, get through security, find a parking place, and, you know, walk wherever you're going to be going. But, I mean, the scenery there is amazing because, unlike Illinois, there are actually hills, you know, out east. And
I'm confused.
It makes a very nice scenery. And, you know, it was a nice day out. It was, you know, a crisp day in terms of temperature, which is great for football. And, you know, there was lots of tailgating once we got into the campus, and the buildings there are obviously, you know, historic and really, you know, pleasant scenery, and obviously all the traditions they have around football games with the cadets and the parades and the parachuters in, bring the game ball in from the helicopter before the game, and all that stuff is, you know, pretty cool to go. And, you know, going into it, I wasn't really sure what to expect, you know, given such unique setting. But it was really a great game day experience. And I can honestly say, you know, I've been to all Northwestern games at all the Big Ten stadiums. I've been to various other stadiums and bowl games. And this is probably the first time I've been somewhere that I did not hear one negative comment directed towards opposing fans. And obviously you'd expect that from the cadets, but also all the fans who were there as well. They were really great, and You know, they didn't really have anything to say before or after the game, and it was a great experience.
Yeah, I still feel kind of bad about, and I would have felt bad if I'd gone and like just been like rowdy and annoying towards Army. Like, I felt bad the entire time whenever I have to like say bad things about Army. It's so difficult.
Would you heckle Army basketball? If Army basketball came to Northwestern, would you be riding the Army players from the student section, or as is your normal MO, or would you give them a pass?
I'd probably give like some sort of golf clap. I don't think I could. You know, in addition to like the them being better than me as human beings, like there's also the whole of them also never having been to the NCAA tournament. So it's like a kind of double whammy of like things that make me want to bond with them rather than make fun of their names and you know, their physical appearance.
You really should try to get them on the schedule.
Yeah.
Maybe although now that the Chalice has moved on to Navy, maybe it's magical spread throughout the service academies. So maybe it's a bad idea.
Yeah, that Army basketball does not have as cool a tradition as Army football, so who knows. But
I don't think all the students are required to attend basketball games.
Are they all required to attend football games? It's like,
yes,
mandatory?
All the cadets are required to attend the football games.
Why can't we do that here? I guess because we're not cadets.
Well, I think they just need to remind them that they're paying for it anyway, and they should, you know, use their Northwestern education to realize that they should be going to take advantage of the money they're already shelling out.
Yeah, yeah, when you're spending, you know, like $50,000, you might as well take advantage of the, like I think it's like 50 or 60 bucks that, like, that are like the student athletic fees or whatever. But yeah, definitely. Mandatory attendance is something I'll look into. If you threaten kids with like slightly lowered grades, like if you miss like a class, your GPA drops by 0.05%. Or I mean, if you miss a game, like that, like you would get like every single Northwestern student at the game every week.
Well, they should just get the people, like questions into quizzes from recent football game that you'd only know by attending. You know, like how many times did Air Willie stand on his head?
Just be counting on. Luckily, they've done away with the creepiness of Air Willie. I haven't seen that.
Thank goodness.
Inflatable mascots. BC had one. It's creepy. I don't like the inflatable things. But yeah,
well, that guy's a big factor at the basketball games. He does a big thing at halftime. I used to go to a lot of BC.
The BC Giant inflatable thing.
Yeah, he's a huge presence during the basketball halftime show. He goes out there with the cheerleaders and stuff, and their mascot takes half court shots over his head.
What made me give it up was there's a YouTube video of one of those things at an NBA game that like has the capability to not make a human being go inside, like they make it look like it's eating a person.
Oh yes, I've seen those things.
They actually had it in a Northwestern game a few years ago. Like someone pretended to be an opposing coach and like stood in a suit near the sideline, and then like the creepy inflatable mascot went over and ate him. And like I've had nightmares about that experience like one out of every 15 nights ever since. It was the most horrifying thing I've ever seen.
That's
Yeah. Anyway, to get back to things, so in conclusion, your theory, I suppose, is that, you know, which is what I agree with a kind of weakened Big Ten, or not weakened, just sort of bad this year, it looks like, with...
It's been pretty bad for a while.
Yeah, but let's not talk about that. Let's not notice the whole SEC thing. I refuse to acknowledge
I'd say they're pretty mediocre.
That's a good one, because we're better than the MAC sometimes.
Well, the majority of the
time. Lost to the MAC this year? Indiana lost to Ball State.
No one lost to the MAC, but if you want to, you know, a transitive property it, we just lost to Army, who, like, got pretty violently destroyed by NIU. And Penn State didn't look great against Temple. The sacrifices haven't been going too well this year. But so, with the Big Ten pretty mediocre, not bad, with Dan Persa coming back, and with, you know, whatever you want to say about Army, you know, behind us, I guess, how are you feeling about this year? Where do you think Northwestern could end up? Where are the bowl predictions? I know you have the bowl prediction page, which gives me the percentages, and I've always wondered how much of that is a pure, like whether there's like major algorithms and supercomputers working on it, or whether it's just you.
Well, I can say those numbers don't actually come from me. They come from GoUPurple, the one who runs HailToPurple.com. But he has explained his methodology to me before, and let's just say that he has a sound statistical backing. But it does come from his mind. So given that, I think that, you know, Northwestern can still fare pretty well. I predicted 8 wins preseason. That might be a reach at this point, but I think 7 is quite possible, and 6 is still fairly certain, again, given that we have some weaker teams left on the schedule, and I think we'll upset somebody, or at least one team down the road. So with Persa coming back, with us not facing option teams, and with these seniors maybe finally coming together, I think that we'll see some positive things down the road here.
Positive things. I like positive things.
One quick thing I think maybe we should touch on is that, I don't know, I've already bagged on a couple individual players here on this podcast in the early part, but...
Because you're a horrible
human being. Yeah, because I'm a bad person, but all the carries being given to Jacob Schmidt.
Oh, this now, is... Oh.
You know, I'm sorry I had to go here, but Jacob Schmidt, man, like, he must be doing something that the coaches are liking. He must be good at blocking.
He is,
understanding the pass schemes. I think that has to be what it is. But that last run he had on the last drive, there was room to run there. And you could tell that his fumble issues in the past have really gotten into his head, because it looked like he was holding the ball tight with two hands and basically just standing in the pile. And he just said, I'm not fumbling this ball under any circumstances. It seems like that's his number one goal when he gets
the ball.
He
made it through the entire podcast without the Jacob Schmidt scenario. And now we had to go in. Oh, that's – oh.
Yeah. Bryce McNall are going to be mad at me.
Well, Bryce McNall was good, except, you know, he had a lot of tackles.
Right. Well, yeah, we tried to call Bryce McNall and get him on the podcast, but Steele dragged him away from the phone, so we couldn't reach him. Yeah, hey-o.
Okay.
All right, yeah. I guess the Adonis Smith injury is freeing up.
That wasn't really a question so much as he felt like denigrating the name of Jacob Schmidt.
Well, the only thing I can say is that he's pretty good as a receiver out of the backfield on those screen passes.
Yeah.
He always seems to get, you know, 8 or 10 yards at a minimum on those, and that's very helpful. Beyond that, I will leave you to your own devices.
I mean, to just keep on that, I was watching after the Kafka thing. I wanted to write a post about Kafka, and I watched the Outback Bowl highlights, and he had, like, a few good carries and, like, some, like, legitimate nice carries, and I was like, you go, Jacob Schmidt. I see what you're doing. I just wanted to point out that I saw that and it happened. But anyway, now that we've clarified that,
thank you
for thanks for coming on. And as you know, the website is Hail to Purple. You've presumably been there. I go there to check out every time I forget what teams we're going to play in future years. That's always there. There's good analysis from Jonathan. Pretty regularly updated. You know about it, okay? Stop acting like you don't, listeners. I like talking to them in the you form.
Yes,
but,
and the Eastern Illinois fan.
Yeah, the one Eastern around. Illinois fan. I think he left.
The Water Boy is a classic Hail to Purple. I remember reading him way back in the day when he was hating Randy Walker. He wanted Randy Walker fired maybe like 8 years ago. Couldn't stand
he wanted him fired, you know, during the 2000 season. So,
really,
he's pretty hardcore. Yeah, if you meet him in person, he's as hardcore as he seems online.
I
wonder if he's related to AC from the Fireball Carmist comment section.
I don't know.
I really should don't need to be plugging Hail to Purple because it's been it's like the obvious venerable, you know, granddaddy of the Northwestern internets. But, you know, you all know about it. And the the Twitter handle is Hail to Purple, correct?
Yes, indeed.
So that's what you need to know. And thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
It was
great.
All right. To next week. And record.